Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, and I'm just going to wait for a moment or two, and let's go ahead and get Bill Snevelin on the line. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Real well. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine. Well, now, we're going to be talking to a little different audience who doesn't know you. So can you go ahead and just fill them in a little bit? Why don't you tell them how you started out, how you happened to get involved with Wicca, and then just give them the whole story.
Well, basically, I was led into a study of the occult because I was in college in the seminary, and I had a professor who led me to believe that in order to be more like Christ, I would have to do what Christ did, which, you know, on the surface makes sense, because it means that you become more Christ-like. But he told me that Christ had gained the power he possessed by studying the occult and by doing all of the various, going over to Egypt and studying with the Magi and going off to lamas in Tibet and Hindu gurus and all of that. So
now wait a minute. Was this in a religious school?
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine.
It was in a Catholic college.
All right. So you wonder what somebody with those views, which are truly occultic or New Age views, is doing teaching at a Catholic college.
Well, as you probably know, and this was probably exceptional back 25, 30 years ago, which is what we're talking about, but in today it's fairly common in seminaries, today, both Catholic and Protestant, to have people that are promoting occult or New Age worldviews. But this guy was a little bit, you know, exceptional back then. We kind of called him the hippie priest and everything. He was a little bit odd. Anyway, because he had a PhD and, you know, he had a collar on, I thought he was to be trusted. And what did I know? I was only like, you know, 18 years old, 19 years old, stuff like that. So anyhow, I trusted this fellow. And essentially, first of all, I started studying on the outer fringes, things like ESP and parapsychology and ghosts, spiritualism, and before I knew it, I was getting into the occult and into even white witchcraft. I wrote the Church of England, the King of the Witches in England, and he put me in touch with a coven in Boston, and so I was able to be initiated.
All right, fine. Now, did you find that when you got into witchcraft, there was power there that you could access?
Oh, yes. The power is genuine. It's just the problematic part of it is the source. You know, where does the source of the power come from? Of course, in witchcraft and the occult, you're taught to believe that it's within you, and that all you have to do is awaken it, you know, sort of like the power of the force in Star Wars. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And the source of the power, as I learned to my regret, is that it comes from the demonic realm.
And of course, that is true. That is what George Lucas is really talking about. And so many young people, you know, get into this idea that they can access the force without ever realizing that when they say the force be with you, they're really asking for demonic possession. But be that as it may, you got into witchcraft and you actually joined a coven?
Yes. Yes. I was brought into a coven in Boston, and later on I was made a high priest. And started our own, we started our own coven, my wife and I, back in the Midwest, in first Dubuque and then Milwaukee. We had covens in Chicago and really all the way up and down the western coast of Lake Michigan.
Okay, and so you actually had then a whole chain of covens.
Well, something like, they're called daughter covens.
I see.
You can only have 13 members in a coven. By which law, and then you have to split off, so to speak.
And did you learn the power of the pentagram and all of these sort of things?
Oh, yes, yes. We worked with pentagrams and the witch tool is the athame, of course. And we did all the things, you know, we drew down the moon and had esbats and sabbats and the whole thing. But the thing I think that's significant in all this is, while most of the people you'll run into that are white witches, they believe that this is a good thing, that you don't have a devil involved in any of this. In my case, and I think in many people's case, it led into deeper things. It led into, you know, finding out that, okay, the true power behind the god and goddess of witchcraft is actually Lucifer. And in fact, Lucifer is actually mentioned in the lot of the witchcraft rituals in our Book of Shadows, which is sort of like the Bible, if you will, of Wicca. So finally that kind of opened the door for me to consider, well, gee, maybe I can actually worship Lucifer and get more power. Well, then what happened is I had a friend who ran the largest occult bookstore in the city, of Milwaukee come to me and say that I should really check out the book, the Satanic Bible, because he said there was a lot of good stuff in there, even though he didn't agree with everything. So I went out and bought the Satanic Bible and studied it, and indeed there was a lot in there I began to agree with, because it's a subtle process. I mean, you start out with something that appears comparatively benign, and before you know it, you're into deeper things. You're into darker things. And all of a sudden, here I was, a full-blown devil worshiper.
All right, now, were you aware of what you were doing? Were you aware that that really was Lucifer that was giving you the power that you sought?
Oh, yes, yes. There was no question about that. It's just that I thought Lucifer was good. See, I was so deceived by now that I believed Lucifer was the true God and Jehovah was the false God.
Well, of course, actually, doesn't Lucifer really give you freedom? In other words, Lucifer doesn't tell you you shan't do that, thou shalt not do this, and thou shalt not do that, and thou shalt not do the other thing, like the God of heaven. I mean, he's got all these Ten Commandments, and they're all, most of them are just restrictions. They're telling you what to do, whereas Lucifer tells you sort of do what you want to, doesn't he?
That's it. The whole illusion of freedom.
Right. Which of course,
the whole illusion of freedom.
Which of course leads to moral anarchy, and freedom not being what you want to do, but doing what you should do according to God's rules. But I'm sure when you were into this, you probably were pretty young at the time, weren't you?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, by the time I'd gotten to where I am describing now, I was in my mid to late 20s.
All right.
So I was still a young fella.
All right, fine. So then, of course, you now, did you get in touch with some other Satanists, or did you join some Satanist groups?
Well, yes. That's the thing. See, I did end up with networking with other people, both in the Church of Satan and other kinds of Satanists. And ultimately, I ended up contacting what are called, you know, hardcore people. There's a group, for example, in Michigan that was known as the Order of the Black Ram and the Brotherhood and some of those kind of outfits.
Well,
and they're kind of more underground. They are not out there. Because, like, the Church of Satan is a legal organization. I mean, they have a tax-exempt number just like your local Baptist or Lutheran church. But these are underground organizations that don't exist on the radar chart, so to speak.
Well, did you ever run into the Philosophical Research Society and Manly P. Hall?
Yes, yes. Well, first of all, before I even knew what I was getting into, I was a great admirer of some of his works. And then after I rose really high or low, depending on how you look at it, in these groups, I found out that he was to be my mentor, Manly P. Hall. And he was the one who kind of helped draw me into the Illuminism and into the study of the highest levels of the occult Luciferian doctrine.
Oh, now, did you actually meet him?
Yeah, numerous occasions.
Actually, was that in the East or in the West or where?
Well, he would come and see me, and most of the time it was actually what you might call an astral visit. This entity would appear to me, and it would be like a sort of a spiritual encounter. But a few times he would actually come in the flesh and bestow gifts upon me as I'd sort of earn things. You know, he would come in person as well.
Now, I think for our listeners, they should know that Manly P. Hall had, I think it was called the Philosophical Research Society in Southern California. He's got this large institution down there, and they have, up until the time he died, they had regular conferences there, weekly meetings, where, of course, they would take people who were interested in the occult and take them into an understanding of the Rosicrucian beliefs and the theosophical beliefs, and, of course, tell people what the future held. He, when he died, was cited Scottish Rite magazine
right,
as the
yeah.
world's leading Masonic philosopher. But he had written extensively about Masonry before he ever joined the Masonic Lodge. And, of course, he very shortly thereafter arose to be a 33rd degree Mason, and then into the degrees above 33rd degree. And if you read his writings and the lectures in ancient philosophy, he will tell you that Masonry is a fraternity within a fraternity, an outer fraternity made up of well-meaning people, you know, who are doing good and having a good time, but an inner fraternity of men who study the Ancorum and Ancornorum, which means the secret and secret of secrets. And so the average Mason really has no idea of what this is really all about, does he?
Oh, no. In fact, most Masons would be totally clueless about these things. Of course, that doesn't absolve them from their involvement in such matters. But, yeah, they don't bother to read their own books, and I hate to say this, but just like a lot of Christians don't bother to read their Bibles. You know, they just kind of go in and show up and warm the pew, so to speak. So, of course, there aren't pews in the lodge, there's just chairs, but they don't really understand what they're involved in, and as a result, they're really, really being deceived in a big way.
Well, then, of course, you eventually joined the Masonic Lodge?
Oh, yes. In fact, I had, way back in the beginning of my sojourns, I had studied for an entire summer with my wife under the Grand Master Druid of North America, and he was a 33rd-degree Mason, and he had suggested very strongly that Masonry would have something that would be very valuable for me. And so I took that under advisement, because at the time, of course, I did not know, you know, what Masonry was. I'd been raised Catholic, and of course Catholics in those days had very little to do with Masons. But later on, another person told me that if I really wished to get back and to understand the full power of Lucifer, I should get into the Masonic Lodge. And so as it happened, one of the guys in our coven, his father was the deacon out of the lodge in rural Wisconsin, and so he sponsored me to be a member of the lodge. And that was, I think, in 1974 when I first became a Mason. And then I rose over the years into being a Master Mason, went through the York Rite, became a Knights Templar, went through the Scottish Rite, and became a Sublime Prince of the Royal Secret, and then even went through the Shrine.
All right, but then, of course, there are lodges above that, which most Masons have no knowledge of, aren't there?
Oh, yes, exactly. There's, I mean, both Manly P. Hall talks about them in some of his work. Also, Arthur Waite, another high-level Mason who was also an occultist, he also mentioned it, mentioned the various, there's the Grand Orient, there's the Rite of Memphis Mizraim, and that was the one that I had gotten into, was the Rite of Memphis Mizraim. It's Egyptian Freemasonry, and it has 97 degrees. And a gentleman had to come all the way over from Europe, from Paris, in order to induct us into that particular lodge. So I got up to the 90th degree in that particular organization.
Now, of course, what's the relationship between that and Illuminism?
Well, when you get up to that level, and this is what is called esoteric Freemasonry, you're at the threshold of what is called Illuminism, where you're about to receive the blinding light of Luciferian initiation. And that is the threshold that once you cross that, you become an illuminated one, which is just what Illuminatus or Illuminati is the plural means. It means you are illuminated. You have the burning light of Lucifer in your consciousness, and really this Luciferian initiation, as it is called, in my experience, is really nothing more than a counterfeit for the born-again experience. I mean, we've got to remember, Satan can't come up with anything original. And so when he sees that God has his people become born again, well, in the same light, Satan wants to have a similar sort of threshold experience. That's what the Luciferian initiation is.
Okay, and did you ever actually go through that yourself?
Yes, I did. And believe me, it is not something you would want to experience. It's very painful, but you feel like you're being infused with an incredible level of power that almost like burns out your circuitry, so to speak, in your brain. And, you at the time you have the illusion that you're virtually godlike. But unfortunately, that's all it is an illusion.
Well, of course, that was the message in the Garden of Eden, you know, if you just do what I tell you to, eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, why, you can be as God and you shall never die.
Oh, yes. That's exactly the same. I mean, you know, the devil's been telling the same lies for 6,000 years, and he's not likely to stop now.
So you were really, really right up at the top of these esoteric societies. These are hidden societies, and the reason you never hear about them, the average individual never hears about them, is because they're hidden and they're secret, and you're not supposed to hear about them.
And, right, and of course, that's the very meaning of the word occult or esoteric. It means something that is hidden, something that is not open to the general public. And that's true of Masonry. It's true of many of these groups that are really, they're modern-day forms of the ancient heresy of Gnosticism.
Right. And, of course, these ideas have been around since the beginning of time. They're simply being manifested now and taken on a certain legitimacy. In fact, Unfortunately, we have an awful lot of people who embrace these philosophies in key positions in every aspect of society today. And this is why this conscious effort to create a depraved society, why we're teaching homosexuality in our schools here in California, starting in kindergarten. We're teaching kids all about homosexuality and how wonderful it is. And you say to yourself, this has got to be mad. I mean, why would this be going on? Well, the reason it's going on is because Lucifer's agents want to corrupt the minds and hearts and souls of those children. And they've done a pretty good job, haven't they?
Unfortunately, yes. We've seen it over and over again, repeatedly. Even here in the Midwest, you know, which you normally think of as the heartland and you know, the place of great, you know, family values, quote unquote, whatever that means, and yet it's happening here too.
All right, fine. So now, of course, you're right up at the very, very top. Now, you're not the top of the Illuminati. You're sort of what, at the bottom of the Illuminati?
Well, yeah, I was in the foundational degree, which is first degree, and there's 5 degrees in Illuminism, and essentially that was about as far as I got when the Lord started to pull me out of it.
Okay, fine. Well, now, of course, then did you actually have a chance when you were there to talk to these people about, of course, the people who really run the world? Because people who, for instance, I get material from the Lucius Trust, which used to be the Lucifer Publishing House. They have a little pamphlet they put out about the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world, and they describe a number of men in various, various fields that really dominate everything that's going on. Did they ever talk to you about that?
Well, yes, very much so. The whole idea there is that there's a shadow government behind the government that's out there in front of everybody to see. And, of course, this is not just true in America. It's true in all the major Western societies and, indeed, in what used to be called behind the Iron Curtain. There are what are called the 9 unknown men, and each one of these kind of is ruler over a continent. And when a person like this says jump, the leaders of the country say how high on the way up, so to speak. I mean, they are so feared that there's really no way that anybody is going to cross them.
Okay, but they talked to you. They never told you who they were, or did they?
Well, no. A few of them I do know, and of course the one person I already mentioned, This Manly P. Hall was, now he's since deceased, he died in the early 90s, but he was the unknown man who was over North America. And I had also been given to understand that a very high-level Sufi adept named Idris Shah was the unknown man who was over the Middle East, who basically was in charge of the Arab world over there. And of course, there's similarly somebody in Europe, traditionally the Duke of Warwick, England, is the head of that, but I don't know if that's still true or not. I know it was true for many centuries. So some of these people, yes, we know who they are, but most of them are again, none of these are people that any of your listeners are likely to have even heard of.
Right, of course, unless you read Manly P. Hall's writings, as I have, and incidentally, probably his most famous writing was The Secret Teachings of All Ages, where he talks about how they have their symbols out every place. They're in the literature, they're in the architecture, they're in paintings. Of course, today we see them on television all the time, and we see them in many of the publications that I have from some of the most illustrious organizations in America. But as he says, they hide these symbols in plain sight because they know people will never be able to see them. Unless you're really schooled in them, unless somebody points them out to you, why, you'd never know that they were there. And of course, it's like the symbol on the back of our dollar bill, the occult symbol that's there. You know, nobody pays any attention to it. And yet, of course, what is a pyramid capped by a glorified eye, which is the secret of the symbol of the ancient secret societies? What's it doing on the back of the dollar bill? But nobody ever asked that question, do they?
No. I think partly as many of these people just don't care to know. They want to be like Sergeant Schultz on Hogan's Heroes and say, I know nothing, I see nothing, you know, and they figure if they don't know it, then they don't have to take any action. But of course, that kind of ostrich head in the sand approach is not going to do you any good when, you know, things really start happening.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, one reason I wanted to talk to you a little bit tonight was because of some of the things that Manly P. Hall had told you. And for our listeners, Manly P. Hall lived well into his 90s. a brilliant mind. I mean, I don't know how many books he wrote, but there must have been at least 30 or more. And, but of course, he was a high level Satanist. And according to Bell, he was, one of the, really the leader of the movement in the United States. And certainly his philosophical research society is still down there in Southern California. I've never had a chance to get there, but he has a lot of disciples and followers. But what did he tell you about the things that lie ahead? Of course, you were with him, what, in the early 80s?
This would have been the late 70s and the very early 80s, yes.
So he was really schooling you to become a high-level leader of this whole satanic movement.
Yes, yes. And you know, very early on, it was explained to me that a lot of what we see going on in the tableau of history has, in fact, all been arranged. That even though there's certain things that would seem to be sort of random acts of violence or history or whatever, whether it was the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand that brought on World War I, the Civil War, you know, Pearl Harbor, various things like that. All these things were actually planned decades, in fact, in some cases, centuries in advance, because they're all moving toward a overwhelming objective.
Now, what is that objective?
Well, the objective is, of course, to create a one-world society in which a one supreme religious slash political ruler of immense power and charisma will pretty much have control of everything.
Now, that was pretty much what Plato talked about in his Republic 2,350 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, yes. In fact, he probably was one of the very first Illuminist-type thinkers. And as you go down through the centuries, this is repeated over and over again. And, of course, at times God foils their plans, but their plans are definitely still, you know, trying to chug along forward. And the fact is that, you know, according to the materials I was exposed to, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, the First and Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, all these wars were in fact planned back in the early part of the 19th century. And even the Balkan conflict that we saw a few years ago, the Gulf War 10 years ago, and even the war we are currently involved in Afghanistan, all of these wars were on the timetable, and basically, right now, we're chugging along on track.
Well, now, what, according to Manly P. Hall's anticipation, where do we go from here?
Well, the next step is to reopen our war with Saddam Hussein, and of course, there's already a lot of saber-rattling going on, but that's going to be the next thing we're doing, but the idea then is that he in turn has been equipped with some pretty nasty biological agents, and that these will be unleashed on America in retaliation. And then at that point we will be both stretched pretty thin militarily, but also we will be weakened internally, because I think really we are kind of being deceived if we think that our health infrastructure is capable of dealing with an outbreak of some significant biological attack, you know, whether it's smallpox or Ebola or whatever. And so while we're in this situation, Russia, which is supposedly now our good buddy, is going to launch, you know, a preemptive nuclear strike and pretty much eliminate us from the equation, so that Israel will be more or less defenseless. And, you know, then the goal, and this is the other goal that I was trying to say, beyond world domination, is also that this ruler would rule from Jerusalem, that the Jerusalem would become a global city that would not belong either to the Jews or the Arabs, but rather it would be an international site of ecumenical worship, and a new temple would be built, and away we go. And of course, if you study the Book of Revelations, this is precisely what the plan is.
Now, of course, is this really what Manly P. Hall had told you there and almost 20 years ago?
This is, you know, obviously a Reader's Digest version, but yes, this is precisely what the plans were. And, you know, as I tell everybody, realize the devil is a master chess player. He can see many moves ahead, but of course God is supreme, and you know, he can certainly kick over the chessboard anytime he chooses. And in fact, he has done so at times. He has derailed the plan, because I know, for example, the original hope on the part of the Illuminati was to have the League of Nations in place. And of course, that thing kind of fizzled out in the early part of this century. And of course, then 20 years later, we have the UN. But, you know, so God does intervene when his people really cry out to him and get serious.
Well, between Lucifer's plan in time and God's plan in eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And Lucifer has his plan, God has his plan, and it's going to be fascinating as we see this thing unfold. I have, after going over all of my clippings over a number of years and reading the books that have been put out, it's very obvious they're preparing us psychologically for a biological attack. They're scaring us to death, and of course this is being used to get us to give up our freedom, but, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised if in the not too distant future, this worst fear, this worst possible nightmare, didn't become a reality here.
Yes, and it certainly does not. I mean, you know, if I'd have been talking about this even a year ago, a lot of people would think it was quite fanciful. But now, you know, I mean, you know, we're seeing it's happening right now in the nightly news. You know, whether it's anthrax, the September 11th, or you know, the fact that Saddam Hussein is refusing to cooperate with weapons inspections, and it looks like we're going to go in there again. So, you know, it's like all bets are off.
But, of course, everybody's forgotten that we backed Saddam Hussein when he came to power. We financed Saddam Hussein. We gave him the biological weapons. And, in fact, Senator Riegel brought that out in his report, which we can get for anybody who really wants to read it, long and detailed. Of course, it cost Senator Riegel his position in the Senate. I've tried to contact his office and get him to come on the programs, and he will not talk to anybody. He did tell me some other people to talk to, but he's rather embittered by the whole thing. He tried to do what was right, to warn the American people that we had created, we had financed, we had supplied Saddam Hussein with all of the weapons that now threaten us today. But, of course, that's all been forgotten, just like the fact that we financed the Taliban, we supported the Taliban right up until September 11th, year 2001, and then suddenly the Taliban, who had financed and supported before that, became our enemy. Americans have such a short memory.
Yes, and unfortunately, I think our leaders depend on that being the case, that most of us seem to have the memory of an average, well-educated sheep. You know, we don't really follow and bother to put together the news. We just sort of let it be spoon-fed by Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw or whoever.
Oh, there was a fellow named Letter who wrote a book one time. It was called A Nation of Sheep, and it's I hate to say that, but it really is true, and that's why we need people like you out here, you know, giving the historical background of so much of this, because you've lived this, and have they ever tried to, you know, get to you at all, or discredit you, or do anything to you? Because after all, they don't like people like you out there exposing the secrets of the dark side.
Well, yeah, we've had numerous death threats back in the 80s and early 90s. I think the more I got books and things out, I hate to say it, but in a way it's kind of a form of self-defense, because then after I've now written 7 books, and some of them have exposed a great deal of darkness, and if they wipe me out, all it does is, you know, A, make me a martyr, and B, make the books all the more credible. So, you know, that's one thing, and as I delight in telling everybody who's listening, is the fact that my dad can beat up their dad. So even though we have had, you know, some attempts on our life over the years, you know, we've come up comparatively unscathed, thank God.
Well, I think that God does look after certain people, and that I'm glad he's looked after you. And, of course, this is why I always ask people to pray for our ministry, for our provision and protection. And I know we have an awful lot of people doing that, and I'll ask you to sort of add Bill Snevelin in on that when you're praying, because he and certainly Ed Decker, who he used to work with, have actually, I know Ed's had several attempts on his life, but the God does look after the people he wants to keep here.
And it is interesting, if you look in the traditions of the Catholic Church, there is this idea. Are you familiar with the prophecies of St. Malachi?
I'm...
Not the biblical prophet, but the monk.
No, I'm not.
And I don't think this is too far afield, but within the Catholic traditions, there was this Irish monk who had a vision from supposedly St. Michael the Archangel, and supposedly he had a vision of all the popes down through the end of time, and this was in the 11th century.
Oh, yes, I've heard about that, and we're sort of getting to the last one, aren't we?
Yes, yes. In fact, supposedly there's only going to be 2 popes after the current one, and so far this guy has been right on with every pope. Which is interesting. And supposedly the last pope, who we don't know how long this one is going to live. It looks kind of like he's getting to the point of being on his last legs. But there's going to be one more pope, and then after him there's going to be the pope that will dare to take the name no pope has ever taken, which is Peter, because there's never been a Pope Peter. And he will be supposedly the Antichrist. And this is Catholic doctrine now. So a lot of people who are very traditional and apocalyptically minded within the Catholic Church believe that we are on the verge of having the Catholic Church be overtaken by a papal ruler who is in fact Satan incarnate. And that basically the whole Catholic Church will just totally apostatize and become part of the one world church.
So basically we're talking about the influence that really is permeating every aspect of our society today. And of course, Masonry has really infiltrated both the Protestant and the Catholic Church, hasn't it?
Yeah, very much so. It's interesting because, of course, for centuries, the Catholic Church was known for its strong stand against the Lodge, that it was almost a joke in the 19th century how much the two institutions fought one another. But today, I mean, there's all sorts of Catholic lay people and Catholic clergy who are now Freemasons. So it's virtually blended again, and of course, even more so in the Protestant Church, where I think really all through the years, especially what we now call the mainline denominations, I mean the Episcopalians and the Lutherans and the Congregationalists, those groups tend to really be rife with Freemasons.
And I think that this really is what people don't understand. The reason that the Church doesn't speak out against Masonry is because if you do and you're a minister, why, that's the end of your career. I mean, they will come after you, and they will have people planted in your congregation or on your board of deacons, and that will be the last sermon you'll ever give. Could that be happening in America today? I've heard that story over and over again. What about you?
Oh, yes. In fact, I've had at least two separate occasions, I won't say which denomination, but where I was invited to speak at a Sunday night service on Masonry, and I found out within 24 hours after my being there that the pastor was fired by the board.
Well, you know, when you tell people what Manly P. Hall had told you many years ago, do they honestly believe you? I mean, this is really such an incredible, incredible revelation that much of history has been scripted. Now, I've said this for a long time, but most people sort of scoff at the idea. They think that it's a cause and effect, without realizing what it says in the New World Coming report put out by the Council on Foreign Relations. At least 10 of the 14 members of that commission came from the CFR, and it said history does not just happen, it is created.
Oh, no. And you're right, though. Most people, they think, oh, they will use the term to say, oh, you're a conspiracy nut, or you're a wacko, or, you know, something to that effect. But yet, you know, if you read, like, you know, the works of people like Carol Quigley, and you know, and these are not wackos. I mean, these are people who are professors, who are insiders, and who really knew whereof they were speaking. And they were quite open. I believe, in fact, Quigley wrote what he wrote because he believed, frankly, there was nothing anybody could do about it, that the conspiracy had gotten to a place where no one could really stop it at that juncture.
And I believe that's true. And if you haven't read his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, and you're out the listening audience, you really need to. And if you'd like to know how to get a copy, why, you can always call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for a suggested donation for the book. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier on the program, I get material from the Lucius Trust. That used to be the Lucifer Publishing House, but a lot of people didn't like the name Lucifer. They thought that had to do with the devil, which it does. But of course, that sort of gave him a bad name. So they changed it to the Lucius Trust. But we have this little pamphlet they sent me, and it's called The Spiritual Hierarchy, and they talk about the men who rule the world. They call them the spiritual hierarchy. They are people who, of course, have advanced. They are superior individuals who have advanced down through the ages. And now, of course, they are in positions of control throughout the world. And they're quite open about it. They don't conceal it. They just figure that you'd never believe the truth Now, the occultists all know this because they get the little pamphlet, but many of you out there in the listening audience would like a copy of the Luciferian pamphlet that the Luciferians put out about who rules the world. The spiritual hierarchy is what they call them. You can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll send you that so that you can have that and you can copy it and try to get to people. Somehow or other, whether we can or not, we at least have to try to make people understand that these things that Bill is talking about are not imaginary. They're real. They really are demonic forces out there. They really are Satanists. There really are witches, and there really are people in key positions who worship the prince of this world. Well, now, you know, you're not very popular in an awful lot of churches, aren't you? Your message is not very popular, Bill?
Well, no. I must say I'm not always as welcome as some people might be. But, you know, on the other hand, I do get blessed every now and then. Someone will have me come and speak, but most churches really don't want to hear this kind of a message.
And
they'd rather hear some nice little frothy thing about, you know, some meaningless whatever, you know, instead of talking about the things that are really happening that are of concern to all sorts of real people.
Well, for our listeners out there, we have a great video. It's not factual, but it's certainly based upon what I believe is going on. It's called Deceived. It's a Hollywood version. It has Lou Gostin Jr. in it and several other well-known authors. And it's the story of how our military has tapped into this supernatural power, into the demonic power, and is using that for military purposes. And if you haven't seen the video Deceived, let me recommend it to you. It's available either in by video or sitting on DVD. Not the sort of thing you'll get shown in movie pictures, theaters across America, but an amazing, amazing story, which I believe has a great deal of truth in it, because there is a supernatural power out there. You can tap into it, but you do it, of course, at the risk of your eternal soul. And, of course, our guest this evening is Bill Snevelin. His ministry is With One Accord. His website is www.withoneaccord, that's one word, .org. That's withoneaccord.org. And his telephone number is 866-227-7761. That's 866-227-7761. And Bill's got a lot of great material there. And I want to thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Stan. Thank you. God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Oh.